Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel feeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
You know, Rusty. There's some old nighttime talk show host used to do that. You know, it's another episode of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ Cortinel. This is show, I think we're over 80 shows now, Russ.
Who would have thunk?
And this is our last show of the year that you're listening to wrap up 2020. Yeah. And who doesn't want to wrap up 2020, Russ? Huh?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wrap it up and burn it.
And burn it. You know, I saw someone said, well, we know one thing for sure. No one's going to make a mistake. With the year when you start to write new checks in January.
Yeah.
You know, you always go back to old year.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, Rusty, how was Christmas? Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. How was it? Fill us in, you know? Everyone wants to know. They're living through your life, Russ. Life. They want to know how your Christmas was.
Well, we had a great Christmas. Allie flew back from Minneapolis, left Eric, her boyfriend, who plays for the Vikings because he was playing on, or he didn't play, but so she came home for 2 days, spent it with us, and she likes to cook like her mom and dad. So we had food coming out the yin yang. It was awesome.
Yep.
Brooklyn was home. It's her 18th birthday today. So she kind of gets, you know, Christmas birthday. And then Lawton stayed in West Virginia. He had a game on Boxing Day or the 26th in the U.S. and 27th. So
how'd Lawton play now? Of course, he played his first pro game or first pro goal that he got.
Yeah.
So he's how many games has he played as a pro?
He's played five.
Five. And how'd this game go then?
They lost the last game 4-2. He's playing, you know what? He's playing better as a pro than he did in college. It's really nice to see. You never know. I don't know what to expect because I don't know much about the league. But right. I saw Gretz. He went by yesterday golfing, and I told him that, you know, Lawton was doing well and looked good out there. And he says, I told you so. I told you he'd be a better pro than college. And I'm like, okay, I got it.
I thought he was a better pro than his dad. I thought he was
Well, he probably whispered that to his caddy, Jimmy, as they drove away.
Yeah.
With a red Solo cup.
Well, very good. So we love to keep our eye on Lawton. And so he's reached the next level after college. And what did you, on the show today, Rusty, I guess, before I ask you this, we've got our new website, thesuspendables.ca. That's thesuspendables.ca. And everything's on there, all the shows. And you can flip onto our Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram. I think we have Instagram there. and YouTube. We got a YouTube channel. I think we have a Twitter account with 8 followers. So get on there, would you? Get on there and follow our Twitter. But I'm having a bunch of fun putting up daily vids onto the website. And we thank everyone for listening. And we thank you for tuning in all year long. So a couple of things, Rusty, I want to talk about. The year in review, there's a good piece that a guy named John Matisse wrote from The Score, and I thought I would steal it and go through it with you and see what you thought. But before that, we are in the middle of the World Juniors taking place in the bubble in Edmonton. Canada's got a couple games under its belt. Did you watch the first game, Russ? They won 16-2, I think.
Yeah. No, Germany. I didn't see either game. I saw a couple highlights, but I didn't see the games.
Well, the German teams had some trouble with their starting goalie with COVID and some other guys, 4 or 5 other guys. And, but holy man.
Yeah.
I like how bad can you be? Like are your backup players that bad?
Well, they're probably young too. Who knows? But
yeah.
It happens. You know, these different, you go through different countries, go through different scenarios and rebuilding. I remember that guy who brought the team over from Switzerland or something. He's really funny.
Right. Christian Volvand is the name of the coach. And here's the clip.
Learn that we are far away from them still. They're faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they can shoot better, they can pass better, they can do everything better.
So is this what you'll tell your team? Like, what do you say to your team?
Exactly that. try to fight against. What I want to say? You know, they have like, I don't know, how many other first rounders they have? How many?
Seven.
Huh?
Seven.
And the rest in the second round?
Yeah.
And one in the fourth round to play like the most NHL game so far. So what do I want to tell against?
Anyway, the guy's funny.
And he had a really young team. It was full of 15 and 16 and 17 year olds. And then they got better and better. But I don't know. It just depends. Canada and the U.S., you know, Russia, they're always strong. Sweden, Finland usually. But some of the other countries have these ebbs and flows.
You see, I mean, there's an obvious reason when you get a really out of whack score, right? That the obvious is you're no good and we're really good, right? On all levels. You'll often see a 6-7, 8-1 Russ. Not uncommon to see 9-1 defeats and losses in that World Junior. Is it because, Russ, like, is everyone trying really hard to score? And if your team's no good, you're going to get whomped and you get down 4 or 5 goals and then you guys just got no shot to come back. In an exhibition series, Russ, are they generally more wide open than normal scheduled play, for example?
No, I think what you have is you have the best players from Canada and the best players from each country, and you know your fourth line probably is a first line anywhere in the country on any junior team, mm-hmm. and so you've got four unbelievable lines. And so every time you put a line out there, it's not like a regular team where, you know, Edmonton Oilers puts out McDavid and then they've got a couple of lines that, you know, you hope they don't get scored on, that you're not expecting them to fill the net. In Canada, every line's going to be awesome. So it's like, you know, doesn't matter which line's going out there, they're going to have a chance to score. And so that's why the scores get so high. And I wonder if because the NHL isn't playing, every player in that age category is available.
Right.
So
right.
You've got every player that's allowed, has been given permission to play, is playing. So normally, I know my year, you know, Steve Yzerman didn't come because he was playing for the Detroit Red Wings. And there was a few others. Like, we didn't have Mario Lemieux. He could have played. He didn't play. So Canada probably has almost all their best players except the one kid from the New York Rangers who said he couldn't play.
Right. Right. Good point. So I sent you the clip. I think you looked at it. There's a defensive, the captain, actually, the defense for the Houston Texans, a guy named J.J. Watt. And they're shitty. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Texans are no good. They're four, but at the time of this press conference, he's in, they're 4-11. I don't know if when they play again or whatever, but at the time we record this, they're 4-11. Anyway, they ask him in his presser, what about the team and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. And how do you finish out the year? And here's what he had to say.
We're professional athletes getting paid a whole lot of money. If you can't come in and put work in the building, go out to the practice field and work hard, do your lifts and do what you're supposed to do, you should not be here. This is a job. We are getting paid a whole lot of money. There are a lot of people that watch us and invest their time and their money into buying our jerseys and buying a whole bunch of shit. And they care about it. They care every single week. We're in week 16. And we're 4-11, and there's fans that watch this game, that show up to the stadium, that put in time and energy and effort and care about this. So if you can't go out there and you can't work out, you can't show up on time, you can't practice, you can't want to go out there and win, you shouldn't be here. Because this is a privilege. It's the greatest job in the world. You get to go out and play a game. And if you can't care enough, even in week 17, even when you're trash, when you're 4-11, if you can't care enough to go out there and give everything you've got and try your hardest, that's bull. So that's how I think there are people every week that still tweet you, that still come up to you and say, hey, we're still rooting for you. We're still behind you. They have no reason whatsoever to. We stink. But they care, and they still want to win, and they still want you to be great. That's why. Those people aren't getting paid. We're getting paid handsomely. That's why. And that's who I feel the most bad for, is our fans and the people who care so deeply in this city, and the people who love it and who truly want it to be great. And it's not. And that sucks as a player to know that we're not giving them what they deserve.
Boy, we're getting pretty nifty, eh, Russ, with me throwing it to clips and everything? That's what they call throwing it to a clip, Russ. Eh?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's really nifty, Jimmy.
Really nifty. You want me to respond?
Absolutely, I want you to respond. You're a player, so I've got lots of thoughts on this, but what do you think about what he did, what he said, and the timing of it?
I agreed with what he said. He was throwing players under the bus that obviously weren't working, weren't trying, were showing up late, and he was calling them out for not being responsible to the game, to the team, and to the fans. And he talks a lot about the fans and what they give up and how they cheer them on and how important they are. And, you know, he left out that he talked about they buy jerseys, they do this and that. And he said, we're so fortunate to have this job to get paid to play a game. He was so bang on, and he left out guys' names, but he called out. So every person he called out, his teammates know who he's talking about.
Right.
The coaches know who he's talking about. It's just probably the fans who, you know, the fans may not know who's, you know, showing up late and all that stuff unless they're getting fined. So I thought it was great. You know, he was calling out his teammates saying, we got to play hard. We're 4-11, but we owe it to our fans to show up and do this job correctly. And I liked what he said.
Listen, Rusty, I disagree on a lot of that, what you said. I love the speech. There's no doubt about it. I love what the guy said. I love how passionate he was, almost crying when he was talking about letting the fans down.
Yeah,
I've heard guys say that before, but it's just kind of like lip service, right? This is no good. It's not fair to the fans. But this guy went into great detail with the fans, and I love that. You know, where he said they work hard, they come to the game, they come up to us, and they tell me, you know, don't worry about it, we're still here, we're gonna buy the jersey, all that stuff, right? I thought it was really good. I think it's coming from the wrong guy. I think it's something that a coach should do. And because Rusty, I'm looking, if he doing it as a player, well, you better not make a mistake, Russ. You better not make a mistake with other games to go, right? Is what I think.
Well, maybe I didn't listen to the whole thing, but what I took from it was he was calling guys out for showing up late, not trying, and not playing. And he's a captain. And we've talked about captains before. They are the voice.
Right.
And so he has every right as a captain to call out his team. And you know what? He's a defensive player, and they are as important as the offense. They got to hold the other team. So he has every right to do that, Jimmy. I mean, he didn't call out. He didn't name any player by name.
I understand.
So the only people who will know is when they hear that, they're going to go, is that me? They'll know. Is that me or not? Am I doing – when I look in the mirror – am I living up to my obligation for what I'm being paid to do? And if I am, then I can walk tall and walk in that locker room. And if I'm not, I gotta, like, you know, I'm letting my teammates down. I'm letting the owner down, and I'm letting my fans down and myself.
If you were the guy who was being called out, Russ, not directly, but you knew, okay, fuck, he's talking about me.
Yeah.
Okay. I get that. Right. Unless you're an idiot, right? You wouldn't know it's you, because he did give four or five examples. I think, Rusty, you as Russ Courtnell would be the first guy to go up to the guy and say, look, it, no sweat. Don't fucking do that in the media ever again. That's the problem I see with it.
I disagree with you.
I don't like it. No problem. Get up in the room, scream and yell, call guys out, no sweat, lock the door to the locker room, but don't go in the media. Don't fight this thing in the press. You know, that's for the coach. I think, Russ, I think he makes a mistake there. And I think it's got a bunch of downside when he walks into the locker room tomorrow and guys are going, who are you talking about? Who are you talking about?
Yeah. You know, in football, a lot of the guys don't know the other players. Like, there's so many players on the team. No, that's true. Because when I played in Dallas and we were out with the Cowboys, we were out with the offensive linemen, and Shane Cherla said to Mark Tune, who passed away years ago, Mark, he said to Mark, he goes, "That's so and so on your team," and Mark turned around and goes, "I don't know if that's."
I never thought that.
Yeah. So a locker room in the NHL is a lot tighter. Yeah, you're all in the same room getting dressed. But there's a lot of guys on the offense that he probably doesn't even know that well because mm-hmm. they're just such a big group of players.
It's brave, though, eh, Russ? Brave, man, as a player.
Well, yeah, it is. It's definitely they're either going to have to shape up or trade a bunch of guys or let them go. And you know what? If they disagree with him, they can always, hopefully they can trade him if they want to get rid of him. It's easier to get rid of one guy than, you know, if he's calling out 5 or 10 guys.
Right.
Tough to get rid of all.
How bad would it be, Russ? How bad would it have to be actually in the locker room for you to go in front of a microphone? Can you imagine the locker room itself? This guy's probably giving you an edited version, you know, of what must be just turmoil, man.
But you've heard guys, like, you've heard players say, "We have to be better. We didn't play well tonight." You know, and I think that's what we got guys who are showing up late, not trying. You know, he's not naming players. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. He's calling out those guys who aren't respecting the game and the fans. And he dragged the fans into it. And so, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see what happens. So we'll see what happens, because now the owner, if he didn't know that, he knows it now.
Right.
And he or she is going to freaking wreak havoc with the GM and the coach, going, "I'm paying these freaking guys this much. You guys are 4-11 and you're letting this shit happen."
Right.
I mean, those guys are going to, the coaches are going to be maybe in more shit than the players. Why is it happening?
Right. So. Right. Well, I know why it's happening. You're 4-11. That's why.
Yeah. Well, if you're the owner, you're like, you know, God, you watch those guys in the owner's box. I mean, they live and die right. with their wins and losses with their
tough
teams.
Tough to do for sure. Tough to do to back check when you get, you know, you're 8-40 or something in a regular season game, you know. But anyway, I love the speech. I just thought the guy should have kept it private, and it should come from a coach, not for him. But we'll see what happens. I know what if I'm on the bubble, Russ, and I'm waiting for him to come in and go, "Hey, were you talking about me? Can you?" Am I good? Are we good? Are we good? Are we good? So anyway, Rusty, we agree to disagree, I guess. Or disagree to agree. That's probably how I want to say it. We disagree to agree.
We got to get Gretz back on the show to see what he would say.
I would love. We'll get him for the 100th, maybe every 50 shows.
How about the 99th there, Hammerhead?
A reminder, you can follow The Suspendables on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And check out our new website, thesuspendables.ca.
What'd you do? I saw you on some social media thing with Billy Bush. Is that the same Billy Bush who was on the bus with Donald Trump?
Yeah, so we played golf last Thursday. So Scotty Upshaw, NHL player, myself, we met Billy Bush and Andrew McGinnis up at a golf tournament at Gosser 3 summers ago. So we played them, and in a group text, we said, "Hey, how about a rematch?" Because Scotty's retired and he lives down here now. And so we went to Bel Air, where they're both members, and we freaking lost by one.
Oh,
Billy Bush. Billy. I wasn't great. I had a couple good holes, but Scotty, who's a like a 1 or a 2.
Right.
He snapped, hooked it out OB a couple times.
You blaming him?
Uppy. And I'm like, he's got to carry me. I mean, I'm good for a couple holes. And so he just unlike him to do that. I mean, he's that good.
Right.
Anyways, we had a freaking blast. And Billy Bush grew up in New York, and he goes, you know, I played hockey. And I go, no way. And he played high school hockey. And he said, my claim to fame in hockey, and I never get credit for it. And he goes, in a big game in high school, I shut down Tony Amonte, who went on to be a Olympic goal scorer in Chicago and played a little bit in Arizona and stuff. And anyways, it's so fun playing with Billy Bush. He narrates the entire round of golf.
Oh, like, no.
you're standing up to hit the rest court and all up, you know, 400-yard par four here at number whatever. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is. He's got a driver out. And it's
not
like
every
that.
Shot.
Oh,
he?
My God. The entire round.
Oh, I'm taking him down. I'm taking him down.
And it's so you understand why he does what he does. I mean, he's in TV and he's fabulous, but he is nonstop talking and just having a great time. Like,
I love a guy who nonstop talks. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Beautiful family. And anyways, it was fun. And poor Scotty, I wish I had played better, but we're going to have another match out at Sherwood or down where Scotty plays. So
another torn down golf course instead of Bel Air.
Oh, Bel Air was nice. They redid it. It's beautiful.
I've got a great Bel Air golf course story for you. So Bel Air, folks, is right in Beverly Hills, right? Rusty, it's Bel Air. It's right off Sunset Boulevard. The golf course is right
in Bel Air. Right in Bel Air.
Right. The Bel Air golf course is right in Bel Air, which is really a suburb of Beverly Hills.
Right beside Beverly Hills, yeah. Okay.
I got a buddy of mine from Ottawa who wins a trip to L.A. He phones me because he knows I know Gretz, and we're going to come and catch a couple of games. And he phones me up, Jungle, is this, you know, can we go when Wayne's there? And I'm like, yeah, of course we can do that. And typical Gretz, right? He's like, oh, you're coming. He was in Edmonton, right? And I was flying down with him on the same plane. They didn't charter. And he's going, oh, yeah, you're down for this trip, right? Fantastic. There's two games you guys are going to go to. And by the way, and he just like pours it on, right, with what we're going to do. So when we get there, we land at the airport. My buddy's there. And he's going wide-eyed as he sees Wayne and I walk off the plane. And Wayne says, well, get your buddy to get his rental car, and I'll take you guys to the Beverly Hills Hotel. You got to see this joint. You know, because Gretz was like a kid. Anyway, we go for lunch in the Polo Lounge, and it's Wayne and Janet. And there's a friend of Janet's there. Great-looking girl. I don't want to use her name. Anyway, fantastic. And my buddy, who's a bit of a goof, okay, Rusty? Bit of a goofball. Great guy. And he's way older than this girl. We have lunch, and him and I say goodbye, and we get in the car to go to our hotel. And my buddy says, did you see that chick checking me out? Right? And I go, no, she wasn't. She wasn't. He goes, I'm telling you, dude, I probably got her by 15, and I think I still got it. I think I'm going, no, you don't. She's not, right? And he goes, you know what? I think we're going to see her tomorrow night because she's coming to this dinner that they're honoring Wayne.
Yeah.
And I'm going, dude, don't. I'm telling you, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Leave it up to the master. He's saying so. The next day, Russ, we go golfing at Bel Air.
Right.
Wayne arranges it. I'm like, this is crazy. You know, we're going to go to Bel Air, and we do. And Wayne can't make it. He gets tied up. But his lawyer, who's the member, meets us there, a guy named Ron Fujikawa.
Ron.
Right, great guy. God bless him. He died a few years back. But Ron shows up there. He's kind of late. Tommy and I are just stargazing all over the joint looking at this. And off we go. And whammo, this guy gets a hole in one, three holes later. Okay. And Tommy and I are gambling, and I'm getting drilled. My buddy Tommy and I are doing this is the name of the guy who thinks this girl really likes her. So he's all revved up and he's beating the shit out of me golfing. I'm down like a couple hundred. Okay.
Oh boy.
And I say to Fujikawa, I go, hey Ron, are you into practical jokes? Into pranks? And he goes, oh fuck, I'm your guy, buddy. I'm your guy. I said, okay, let's call her Julie. Tom thinks Julie really likes him. And I don't want him to be embarrassed, but can you work him a little bit and say Julie maybe asked about him or something like that? Right? Through Wayne. And he goes to me, absolutely, pal. Okay. So Tommy putts out on the hole, I'm down again, And I go, good putt, Tom. And Ron goes, Tommy. He goes, oh, now this is making, like he goes into the role, okay, like an actor, Rusty, okay? He goes into the role, he goes, oh, Tommy, now I, you know what? You got to be the guy. I had to phone Wayne this morning before the golf game. We had some business to discuss. And Julie's at the house there having coffee with Janet. And she gets on the phone with me and she's like, Tommy this, Tommy that. Are you going to see him? He's such a good looking, on and on and on. That's you. I never did put two and two together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Long story short. Okay. Next hole. Okay. Next hole. Tommy. Whew, out of bounds. Okay. His tee shot. Okay. Three putting. Okay. Double hitting chips. He goes, Jimmy, I don't care if I lose 500 today. Anyway. And that was at Bel Air. And poor Tommy was going on and on. And finally, I had to blow the bubble. And tell him he was so pissed. He didn't talk to me for about 6 months. But anyway, that's a great guy. Great gag, Rusty. Oh, if you ever want to get a guy. Year in review. Okay. We got distracted. Let me read some of this, Rusty, and get your thoughts. It's difficult to wrap your head around the enormity of the moment. Well, you're technically still in the moment, but 2020 will undoubtedly go down as one of the most unique and bizarre calendar years the hockey world has ever faced. From COVID-19 derailing the 2019 season to extending the collective bargaining agreement amid a pandemic to NHL players speaking out against racial injustice while inside the playoff bubbles to Tampa Bay, your buddy John Cooper winning the Stanley Cup after setting a record the year before for tying a record for the most wins in the NHL and then losing four straight in the first round. Who will? Well, yeah. You must have been around that because Cooper was, he's a Gauzer guy, isn't he?
Yeah. He didn't win coach of the year.
Yeah, I need it right. Here are some of the most significant touchstones from 2020. The first one's play of the year. Okay. And there's a bunch of them, but they give it to Connor McDavid that everyone wearing the undressed a guy.
Yeah.
Rusty, I don't know. They call it filthy. They call it.
Yeah.
Anyway, check it out. Play of the year is Connor McDavid. Like you played Russ with a bunch of great, you know, in the days of Mario and of course Wayne Gretzky and so many other great guys. Connor, now when you look at him, Sid Crosby. Mm-hmm. Is there something that stood out, Russ, that say all those elite players, like you're all elite, you were elite too, but when you're the best in the league, when you're top four or five in the league, is there something that separates those guys, Russ?
Yeah, I think they just see the game. The game slows down for them, and they make, like Gretz made passes that, you know, they couldn't even see the guy on the TV that he was passing the puck to. It was unbelievable. So they always said Wayne Gretzky had eyes in the back of his head. And he knew where everybody was at all times, in front of him and behind him. And they just make the game look slower. They look like adults playing against kids. And, you know, Connor is so fast and he can do things at that high speed, which a lot of guys can't, and he can. And he's just an amazing player. And obviously we've been watching Sid the Kid play for years now, and he just ceases to amaze.
Ovechkin, right?
I mean, we've been really privileged to watch a lot of great players over the years, and they make it look easy. And maybe for them it is, but not for everybody who plays at that level.
Right. I think, like, I've been lucky enough to be watching hockey as an adult, you know, since the mid-80s. I moved to Edmonton in 85. So thanks a lot for those tickets right there, the heyday of the Oilers. And the days of Mario and Wayne.
Self-proclaimed adult.
So, yeah, that's right. Stevie Y was playing back then, right? A bunch of great guys. So I've been privy to all that, like you have, but the biggest thing I see different than those other guys, and it's not like they were slow, but how freaking fast Connor McDavid is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like how he can move from here to there, like in to move 6 feet and do it. And just
amazing.
Crazy.
They did a comparison between Mario and Wayne one year when Wayne won it. And Mario had many more points, both goals and assists, than Wayne, I think. Yeah, but he had more points, I think.
And Wayne still got it?
And Wayne still got it.
Yeah. So player of the year, no NHL player did more for his stock in 2020 than Leon Draisaitl, another Edmonton Oiler, who is widely considered to be a top five player in the world heading into 2021. The Oilers superstar center recorded 43 goals, including 10 game winners, 67 assists, 39 of which were helpers, for a whopping 110 points in 70 games, 71 regular season games. You like that? You like that pick, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, he's a hell of a player, right? And you know, I think that sometimes the media puts so much attention on different players that they, you know, there's when you have two great players like they have in Edmonton like that, it's hard
yep.
because the media, you know, they gravitate to one guy and maybe not the other guy, and so
yeah,
I think it's flip of the coin. I mean, they're both great.
Here's something I'd like to see the Oilers gravitate towards is a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, winning.
Yeah, winning would be good. Coach of the year. You want to take a guess?
Rick Bowness.
Absolutely. Rick Bowness wasn't even close to winning the Jack Adams Award. The 65-year-old Dallas Star bench boss finished tied for 12th in voting. Okay, receiving one second-place vote and two-thirds votes when broadcasters submitted ballots during the month-long COVID hiatus. Anyway, he was, I agree with that. He was just great, wasn't he, that guy?
Yeah.
Rick Bowness goes on to win that. The team of the year is Tampa Bay and your buddy John Cooper.
Yeah, that was amazing. Sorry, I had to go reach for another claw.
No problem.
I mean, that's heartbreaking what happened to him the year before when they lost four straight and they had tied the record for wins. Everybody thought they were going to win, including themselves. And for them to bounce back like that showed really how good they are. So I was happy. And I'm happy for Coop and Tyler Johnson and the rest of the guys that I don't know and on the team. I thought it was great. And then we got to see Maroon up there too, right?
Absolutely.
Went in St. Louis and then he wins in goes to Tampa. How about that?
I know. How's it going there?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I like this category, Russ. They had the hustle of the year, it's called. This year has been, in a word, heavy. Fortunately, the NHL's game operations crew found a way to break the tension. You wouldn't think Gary Bettman would allow any breaking of the tension. With an assortment of lighthearted gags during the fanless games played inside the postseason bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto.
Oh, wow.
Here's some of the signs they put up, Rusty. Okay, they still had the Jumbotrons going, right?
Right.
The big screens. At the conclusion of tonight's game, so there's no one in the arenas, right?
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. There's no one there. At the conclusion of tonight's game, please exit your couch safely.
Yeah.
Not bad, yeah. Eh, for the league. There was a five-period overtime, and they put up a still overtime sign, deadpan, yeah. A giant screen stations between the Blue Jackets and Columbus, okay, at the Scotiabank Arena. Other message included a ban on the wave. Isn't that great?
Oh, my God, yeah. And then I saw one where they had attendance on the Jumbotron. Zero.
Yeah, zero. Yeah. Tonight's official attendance, zero. It's funny. And the other one they said during that five overtime game, was a call for the seventh period stretch. Not bad. Not bad, Rusty. Some highlights, Russ. Matt Dumba, right, came to the forefront. Quote of the year from him, talking about racial injustice. During this pandemic, something unexpected but long overdue has occurred. The world woke up to the existence of systemic racism and how deeply rooted it is within our society. For those unaffected by systemic racism or unaware, I'm sure that some of you believe that this topic has garnered too much attention during the last couple of months. But let me assure you, it has not. Racism is a man-made creation, and all it does is deteriorate from our collective prosperity. Racism is everywhere, and we need to fight against it. So I stand in front of you today on behalf of those groups and promise you that we will fight against injustice and fight for what is right. I hope this inspires a new generation of hockey players and hockey fans because Black Lives Matter. Hockey is a great game, but it could be a whole lot greater And it starts with all of us. That was Matt Dumba. Pretty powerful stuff, Rusty.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, you know, I've seen it with my son. Been called the N-word a couple times when we played. Mm-hmm. When he played, and it was just freaking horrible to see. And when it happens to your kid, I mean, it's unexplainable. Like, you wonder how one of these 10, 12, 14-year-old kids, you know, who taught them to be like that and to act like that and to have that hate.
Right.
And it's taught, and we gotta punish the people that teach hate. And I think it's starting to happen. I think Will Smith said it best. He goes, racism's finally being videotaped.
Right. And, yeah, right.
And you know, it's bringing, when people see it now, who are, you know, generally live like I live in Oak Bay, grew up in Oak Bay in Victoria, generally a white community, and you feel like it doesn't exist when it does.
Right.
And we just didn't see it until now. You know, I'm married to a black girl and have mixed kids, and the stories you hear are just horrific, and shame on the parents that teach their kids to hate people because of their skin color or their religion.
Hats off to Matt Dumba for doing that. And before we go, Rusty, in 2020, you lost a great league player that you knew in Dale Hawerchuk. He was you would have played alongside him, Russ. Not on the same team, but
Team Canada. We played 91 together. Ducky, he's a great guy, and I got to know him after our careers were over a lot better through my brother, because they played together in St. Louis, and mm-hmm. You know, didn't spend a lot of time with him, but he always made you feel warm. You know, he's so warm and friendly, and right. Just cared about everybody and no ego, humble guy, and he's just wonderful to be around, and really sad to lose him and many others. He's way too young. A lot of the older other players and coaches and executives that we lost were old, had lived a nice long life, and
right.
And Dale had still a lot more to go, and unfortunately he was taken too young.
And laid back. Holy man, was that guy.
Oh yeah.
Cool. I've been at some events with him. You know, I knew him a little bit, and God, was he, you know, hey Dale, you know, I'd be running around the room, you know, hey Rusty, hey Jimmy, shut up. You know, hey Dale, how are you? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. What can I do for you? Yeah. Okay. I got to dial it back here a bit. Yeah.
He was fired up on the ice though. When he was a real competitor, and he was not laid back on the ice for sure. He played a calm, cool game, but he was very, very much in it to win it every time he was on the ice.
He had the biggest feet I'd ever seen too. Oh no.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Huge feet. He had huge feet. So he's on a list. Henri Richard died in Colby Cave, of course. Eddie Shack and Pierre Lacroix, who you would have known, and longtime play-by-play guy. I grew up with him, is Howie Meeker. Golly, yeah. Gee, workers. So we recognize those guys as we wrap up the show. Rusty, what'd you get for Christmas, Rusty? It's time to go. This is a longer show.
Well, Pard Erdman, my Maui dad, gave me a knife set. Beautiful Japanese.
Yeah, you told us that last time. Yeah.
That's right. Okay, yeah. So... And then I got everything was like bar related. I got wine glasses, Rydell wine glasses. I got, oh my God, an expensive tequila bottle. I got stuff for my wine cellar. It was like everyone knows me and my family too well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good gifts. Yeah. 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 I did the gift card thing.
Oh.
Well, that's what I did for the kids.
Yeah,
like what you could. I didn't want to go out and shop, right? They got the big giant mall here, right? But it's.
You're freaked out.
We're locked down.
You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, not going anywhere. So
have a hazmat suit, or otherwise you would go.
I don't. And as if people want to hear me come, hey everyone, they see me coming, they hit the deck. You know, they run, they turn and run. Anyway, Merry Christmas, Rusty. I'm glad you're safe and sound. It's they're. Troubled times ahead here a little bit. Alberta's into kind of full lockdown, and I know it's no better there. So everyone hang in there, and thanks a lot for listening. And drop us, you can drop us an email, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Or better yet, Rusty, go to the website, thesuspendables.ca, and you can get everything on there, including our merch store, Rusty. Time to do a little shopping. Yeah. There's great stuff on there. So, Rusty, you take it easy. Get back to opening and drinking those gifts.
Yeah.
How did you get drunk in the first place, Russ? I didn't. It was the second place. See you later, everybody.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.